Blog Talk Radio. Well, good evening, Patriots, and welcome to the Liberty Bell Hour, where we're letting freedom ring here on Blog Talk Radio. And this is a special post-election wrap-up, because we certainly have some historic midterms to celebrate and discuss, as well as look ahead towards what our next steps are. So tonight is just going to be a kind of a freewheeling show. I'm asking y'all to kind of bear with me, because we're going to have several people calling in, and I think what we'll do is have everybody kind of on it. You know, we'll switch back and forth. We'll try to do a little round robin here, and I promise I will do my best at the controls. But, God, I forgot to introduce myself. I'm so excited thinking about the election. But I'm your host, Daria DiGiovanni, and I just want to thank everyone, old friends, new friends, everybody for joining us this evening. If anyone, as I said, I've declared this an open line Thursday. So if anyone out there listening would like to join us and chime in with their two cents regarding Tuesday's election, please call in at 347-637-2683. So it's going to be kind of fun, and we'll just sort of go with the flow and see what happens. But first, what I'd like to do is read from a blog post that I wrote yesterday after the midterm elections and posted kind of all around on Facebook and Twitter. But I think I speak for a lot of people, and you certainly, y'all can let me know when you call in. But I think I reflected the feelings that most of us had in this blog post. When Barack Obama won the presidency in November 2008, it felt as if a heavy cloud of sorrow, apprehension, and anxiety would hang over our once great nation indefinitely. I recall experiencing the same sort of mournful heavy-heartedness one undergoes upon the death of a loved one, made even more bitter after tireless efforts to get John McCain and Sarah Palin, okay, really Palin, who made voting for McCain much more palatable, elected. As previously noted on this blog, I was a Tea Partier before it was cool. I was raised a conservative and have remained one my entire adult life. I love the United States of America with all my heart, the adopted homeland of my great-grandparents and grandparents, and the place where my father, son of humble immigrants, achieved his dream of becoming a surgeon. The place where my maternal grandfather graduated from Temple Pharmacy School in 1919, during a time when such an accomplishment was nearly unheard of for immigrants, and opened up a corner drugstore that was a landmark in his neighborhood for over 25 years. That was the America I was raised to treasure, appreciate, and defend through grassroots activism. For as long as I can remember, my parents were always involved in the political process at all levels, local, state, and national. I knew what I believed and why. Had I been old enough, my first presidential vote would have been for Ronald Reagan, but I missed the opportunity to send him back for a second term in 1984 by several months. But I remember well his sunny optimism, his love of country, and his stalwart, principled leadership. Thanks to his indefatigable efforts, the scourge of communism at last crumbled, freeing Eastern Europe, East Germany, and the former Soviet Union. Yet years later, politicians who abandoned Reagan conservatism set our country on a course of reversal that ultimately led to the ascendancy of the most radical president in the history of the United States of America. That mournful morning after November 4th, 2008, when a crowd paraded in front of the White House brandishing the unthinkable, the hammer and sickle flag, I remember crying uncontrollably on the phone with a dear friend and fellow patriot, wondering what would happen next. What was to become of the land of opportunity that had drawn untold numbers to its shores, including my own amazing family? Was the American dream really over? My answer came a few months later when something amazing happened. Ordinary Americans decided they weren't going to go gently into socialism and tyranny. So they rose up in remarkable numbers to defend their freedom, even in the bluest of places. From South Florida to Seattle, they protested on street corners and town hall meetings, threw their support behind stalwart conservative candidates, organized on social media sites like Facebook and Twitter, and vowed to do everything within their power to take their country back. A bright light began to pierce the darkness. Tea Party Fort Lauderdale, the longest-running Tea Party in America, formed in February of 2009, is still going strong week after week. Every Saturday, they gather on the corner of US 1 and Oakland Park Boulevard in Fort Lauderdale, with plans to step it up even more in the wake of last night's fabulous election results. Over the past 20-plus months, they've grown into a force to be reckoned with, as has Karen Hoffman's South Florida-based DC Works for Us. A tireless grassroots activist, Hoffman is one of the most dedicated, genuine people I know. Then there are my dear friends and passionate defenders of freedom, Ellen, Kathy, Jessica, Christina, Victoria, Steve, Adam, Tim, Ed, and so many others who've kept me strong, determined, and resolute throughout the first major battle of a long, protracted war. Getting to know these fine human beings has been an incredible blessing. And to all of my Facebook and Twitter friends, whom I only know through the blessings of modern technology, thank you for being a welcome source of strength and resolve in a very trying period in history. Along with local friends and my family, you've managed to keep me sane through the radical madness that defines Obama's presidency. Election night 2010 was the culmination of a hard-fought, principled fight, and the celebration was sweet. But as Florida's new governor-elect likes to say, it's time to get to work. So with that said, I want to go ahead and open up the lines here. I got a few people here, and I think I know who the first two are. So let me just go ahead and open up the line. Okay, I got a caller from 71 that starts with 714 and one from 512. Who's on the line with me?
Steve.
Is that me?
Hey, Steve. It's Steve and Kathy. I think I have a diva on the line and my co-host on Conservative Republican Forum. How are you guys?
Doing good.
I'm great tonight.
Awesome. I'm getting some feedback. I don't know if somebody's got their computer on or...
Oh,
can
could
you
be mine. I'm listening on my computer. I'll turn it
off.
Oh,
okay.
I muted it.
Okay. All right, well, I'll tell you what, we'll try to be a little bit organized, at least to begin with, because I know we're going to have more people calling in, and they'll just join the party when they do. But, Steve, let me just start with you. You actually ran for state office this time around, and I want to congratulate you for, jumping into the ring and really taking a chance and doing that and devoting all of your time and energy. So let me get some of your thoughts on, one, I guess, what it was like to run for office, for those of us who've never done that, and then two, just your thoughts on the election results in general.
Well, running for office definitely was a unique experience. I'd worked on our mutual friend Ed Lynch's congressional campaign previously, and that was also a new experience for me. But being the candidate myself was definitely different. You see a lot of things. You see the good, which is all the people that support you and really want to hear what you have to say and are interested in your ideas, and, of course, the people that want to tell you their ideas and want to, which is really good because you get to listen and they tell you about things that, you know, that bother them and that concern them that perhaps you hadn't thought of, and then you have to form an opinion about that particular issue. One of our Facebook friends had come to me and sent me some messages about parental rights, specifically the fact that he was divorced and his wife had moved with his daughter out of state, and that he really didn't have equal time with his child, and there wasn't any situation with violence or drugs or alcohol. It was just one of these things where people move apart, and he was very concerned with that issue. So, and that was not something that I had really thought about as one of my campaign issues before I spoke to him, but it was afterwards, and so that was something that was good. On the bad side, not so much in my campaign, but the dirtiness of politics. We all saw just how vicious Ron Klein got with Alan West in the District 22 race. Fortunately, that backfired on him, and Colonel West, we can now call Congressman-elect West. But Yeah, definitely a big yay. But, you know, also the party politics. You know, the Republican Party of Florida did not get behind congressional candidate Bernard Sansarik, who had a real opportunity, I think, to unseat impeached Judge Alcee Hastings. And, you know, I found out later that Bernard won in Martin County by 57%. But if he had actually had the support of the state party, you know, who knows what the results could have been. The state party also didn't get behind my campaign, which I think was very short-sighted of them. They didn't get behind Tammy Donnelly's campaign in District 85, and she came incredibly close to unseating Joe Abruzzo. If only the party had actually, you know, devoted the resources, she got 47.41% of the vote. And for a while, she was actually leading during the night. She very well could have won if only just a small amount of resources had been devoted to campaigns that, for whatever reason, the state party didn't think could be won. And we need to change that. This whole idea of safe seats is a self-fulfilling prophecy, and I've been saying it for 2 years. And it's true at our county party level, and we need to really clean up our own house before we get into the 2012 election cycle, or we're going to have a big problem. Because, you know, as much as we had a great statewide win, you know, in Palm Beach County, Rick Scott, our nominee, did not win Palm Beach County. Pam Bondi, who ended up winning for Attorney General, did not win in Palm Beach County. You know, I keep saying that if we don't put a great team together here at the local grassroots level, then 2012 is not going to be a good year for us. And, you know, 2/3 of the Senate will be up for re-election besides the presidency in 2012. And our other senator, Bill Nelson, will undoubtedly run for re-election. And I think we'd all love it if we had another Republican instead of Bill Nelson. But we're going to have to really, really get our house in order if we want that to be the case.
Yeah, you make bring up some excellent points, and I want to bring in Kathy in this conversation too, since she also lives in Palm Beach County. But Kathy, let's just first just your general thoughts, and then maybe speak a little bit to what Steve was saying.
Well, my general thoughts: I'm very excited about the candidates that did win. Our state is moving in the right direction, and to comment a little bit about what happened in Palm Beach County, we did have a good voter turnout for Republicans. The fact that we are 2-1 in the minority in Palm Beach County, if we look at the statistics, we did have a very good turnout. But to go a little further with that, I agree with Steve about our state party and our local Palm Beach County REC. There does seem to be some problems there that we really do need to work on. On the bright side, I've spoken with several other committee men and women right here in central Palm Beach County, and we are all excited about what we think that we can do for 2012. We're going to be organizing. We're going to be meeting. We're going to be getting out into our communities and talking to people and essentially getting people involved. One of the problems that we've had here in Palm Beach County is that it appears that the committee men and women of the REC kind of gave up. I know that they had a big job because we were not on the precinct format where each committee man and woman was responsible for their own precinct, and that created an almost impossible task for those on the REC. But since June, since we've changed that, I see a lot of excitement in the people that are, you know, leading the charge, so to speak, for Republicans in their precincts. And we're talking about having barbecues, going out and knocking on doors and getting to meet our local Republicans and giving them a reason to come out and vote, giving them a reason to come out and volunteer. One of the things that we were sorely lacking here in Palm Beach County was volunteers. there were just a few of us doing the job of many.
Yeah.
And we were all exhausted by election night. But we were very, very pleased, even though we did lose some local races here, with the overall outcome. We attribute that to our hard work, and we hope that in 2012 that there will just be a whole lot more people who will get involved and, you know, help candidates like Steve and Tammy Donnelly. Overall, I'm very pleased. I think that our state is on the right track, and I think that we have some hope now that some of these bad policies that have been implemented by the Democrats will now be reversed, and we'll be on the right course for a better country.
Yeah, hear, hear. And just another thing to speak to your point about Palm Beach County, and then I'm going to go ahead and bring on, we have a couple more people on the switchboard. I was actually speaking about that at Allen West Victory Party the other night with our friends Tim and Jessica, and Tim made a good point, and I'm so glad to hear you talk about, you know, the barbecues and the outreach, because he was saying, he goes, you know, there are people are conservative in Palm Beach County, he said, but they may not necessarily be registered Republicans. But all the more reason why we need to get out there and be more visible. And we, you know, between the three of us, we sort of decided we were going to make that our mission. And I think with all of us involved, we can do that to basically flip Palm Beach County to red. Because when you look at the overall numbers, I mean, Pam Bondi won by, she got the most votes of anybody in Florida. You know, we got some great people. I was breathing a sigh of relief Wednesday morning when Alex Sink conceded the governor's race, and I was watching Rick Scott deliver his victory speech. I have to say that was quite a relief. And I think I read somewhere that this is the reddest Florida has been since Reconstruction. Or, you know, I probably should have pulled up the link to the story I was reading yesterday. But basically, this is historic for Florida. And so so I think what we need to do is kind of work at the local level in our county and make sure that our county can also be a part of that, and so that good candidates like Steve and Tammy, you know, don't get left behind. And we certainly saw that, you know, with the Republican Party in Delaware, with the way they treated Christine O'Donnell. I mean, I find it very interesting that she beat Chris Coons with independents, but she lost with Republicans. I mean, that just, there's just no way that something like that should happen. So all excellent points. And what I'm going to go ahead now is bring on, and I'm so thrilled that she's joining us tonight, I've got Warchick, and I've also got Love My Freedom. So Warchick, what I'm going to do is let me bring you on, say hi, and then I'm going to go ahead and get my friend Love My Freedom on as well. So good evening, Warchick.
Hey, it's good to be here. I'm so glad to be back.
How are you? Now, you live in Utah, correct?
No, well, we're trying to move to Utah. I live in Washington, the state where things are still kind of in a toss-up.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, so we're not going to know who your next senator is for a while, huh?
Well, it is looking like Murray. It's still awfully close to tell. And as usual in this state, everywhere except along the West Coast is red. But the West Coast is the one with the money, and it is the one with the really large population and a lot of the hippie politics. And
yeah,
they are the ones that usually swing these things.
Yeah, you know, I was looking at a map of Washington State yesterday, and it was amazing. Most of it's red, and you just have that area by, I guess it's Seattle,
right.
And is it King,
yeah,
County? That's the one that's real corrupt.
Yes,
yeah,
King's just horrible, and there's a lot of a very large Muslim population there too, because of Microsoft and Chinese, and a lot of mosques, a lot of dealings with Washington, or care of Washington. Over there, a lot of controversy that hit, ironically, 1 week before the election with these two Muslim women who claimed that someone at a gas station tried to run them over and yelled slurs at them. And I thought, oh, this is just perfect, doing it right before the election. It's kind of really gone nowhere, but of course, hippie fagotronics, they're trying to make something of this, so...
Yeah, of course. And of course, they know how to exploit our weaknesses, too.
Yes,
you know,
they absolutely
they
do.
Know.
Well, they know. Yeah, they know we tend to be very guilt-ridden, which we've got to get rid of. And that they know You know, this reminds me of how people were saying with Hillary, why is she holding back with Obama? Well, she planned to be up against a young black man. Her plan when she was planning decades ago to run for president was to take on an old white European racist male. She held back because, like everyone, she was blinded by the black. And we have been so bludgeoned in this society that if you're white, you have no right to question or go up hard against somebody of a darker, oppressed color. And sure enough, you know, that is exploited like you would not believe over on the West Coast. It's exploited left and right, and too many of us whites are falling for it. That's why I call it political castration, because it has rendered logic and reason impotent. We all give in to emotion.
Yeah. Risa, and I can tell you, years ago, when Washington Mutual Bank existed, I worked in, you know, corporate communications and marketing, and once a year I'd have to fly out to Seattle, which for somebody who hates flying and is afraid to fly, it's the longest domestic flight you can take, so it was kind of rough, but I thought the city was beautiful, but man, you know, it was so liberal. I mean, and I wasn't out there to talk politics, but you know, you just overhear conversations among people. And you know, one year I was out there in 2000 before the whole election debacle happened, and you know, all the Gore Lieberman stickers everywhere, and it was funny. So I definitely understand what you mean.
Let me go ahead and but yeah, I wouldn't live there. Not now.
It's a shame. It's such a gorgeous
state.
It's beautiful.
Oh my gosh, yes, it absolutely is, and that's what's heartbreaking.
So, all right, well, let me go ahead and bring on, I think I got Love My Freedom here on my friend Mark on area code 843. Mark, are you with us?
Hey, Daria.
Hey, how are you? Now, you are in South Carolina, correct?
Yep, the reddest state in the Union.
I'm very proud of that. Well, let me see. Now, South Carolina made history the other night because you now you elected the first female governor. And speaking of minority, she's a conservative who also happens to be of Indian descent.
Yep, and
but
we also
a black conservative.
Right, and that's my district. And you guys and us are the first the ones this year to elect a young black man. Well, ours is a lot younger than your guy. very, very conservative. In fact, this young man, Tim Scott, was one of our legislators here in Columbia. And as soon as Obamacare passed, he immediately wrote the bill excluding South Carolina from Obamacare. So we're proud of him.
Excellent.
And we also got rid of Spratt this time.
I thought that was wonderful.
And that, his district, it's the first time it's went red in over 100 years.
Oh, wow.
Amazing.
So
that's amazing. Well, I think we can go ahead, Mark.
Oh, so we are the reddest state in the country right now.
Well, and I think we can finally dispel the notion of you know, Tea Partiers and Southerners all being a bunch of racists, because you know, I think South Carolina could be considered Southern for sure, and the reason Tim got elected was because of his principles, and no one cared about his skin color. And the same I would, you know, venture with Nikki. So it's kind of funny. I haven't looked at the coverage on some of the non-Fox channels. Have they mentioned any of that, or are they just trying to overlook the fact that we have a ton of new female representatives in the House and also at the governor level and state level, and a lot of conservative minorities?
Well,
so maybe I'll
go
around.
I'm hoping don't make that an issue.
Right, but what I mean is I'm hoping it finally puts to rest this idea that, you know, if you're a conservative, you're a racist. If you're a Tea Partier, you're a racist.
Right.
Because I think that card, it should be worn out by now.
It should be, but look how effective it's been in the last 50 years, started in the 60s, because, everybody forgets that there were really only maybe two blacks in power and women, and everyone forgets that no matter how much marching and, you know, rallies that minorities have, it was old white conservative European men who said, you know, there is truth to this, this is wrong, we should not be engaging in this behavior anymore, we need to change things. Nobody mentions that, because no matter how much they marched, they did not have the power in Congress. It was them convincing people that did have the power. And let us not forget Freedom Summer. That was nothing but young, white, middle-income college students in skinny ties and glasses coming to help minorities, came and helped the minorities register. Once those people started really getting involved, people like Charlton Heston marching with Martin Luther King, that is when something was done. Yet you don't hear that mentioned. The only place I've seen mention anything about the minorities, about the women, has been Fox. None of the others have. I don't like dwelling on race and sex, because we either mean colorblind or we don't. But 2 years ago, it should have put to rest any idea that we're a racist nation when we elected a black liberal socialist president. It should have been put to rest, but it will not be, because of something Khrushchev did in the 60s when he trained people to infiltrate in America. He said logic, truth, and reason, and this is in Saul Alinsky's book too, are not our friends. So you must disarm the logic center with an emotional, overwhelming emotional response. Stay on emotional topics, pit groups against one another, because he knew a house divided could not stand. He quoted that all the time. That way they will implode the inside, and then we come in and take over. And that was his plan. That was the genesis that we saw of political castration. The idea that there are oppressed people, there are oppressors, and you can switch. The left is not going to stop using that. It has been tremendously effective, and the fact is they are now so addicted to the emotional overload. They honestly, I think, are delusional and can no longer see things logically and reasonably. They are not capable anymore of self-analysis or critical thinking, because they have taken no responsibility. They've been raised to believe it's someone else's fault and someone else's responsibility. It's like the bears in Yellowstone. When we were feeding them and the mothers were training their cubs to hunt, fish, and forage and go to tourists, it was fine. They stopped the program, though, when the mothers were no longer teaching their cubs to go to any other place for food except from handouts. And when the people didn't give them enough, they broke into cabins, they stole from them, they became aggressive and violent. And that's when the forest rangers realized to their horror what had happened, and they cut it off immediately. Some of the bears were lost. They died because they refused to be rehabilitated. Because they had become so dependent on a system of handouts that they no longer had it in them to be self-reliant. Well, that is what I think 40, 50 years of emotion have done to the left. They are now so dependent on that as their trump card. And let's face it, we allowed it to work. We crumbled whenever anyone accused us of racism or sexism. We crumbled. We've got to stop doing that. What you need to do is say, I asked you a question of reason and logic. Why are you diverting to the subject of race?
Yep. Excellent. Excellent points. Okay, I got somebody else on the line here. I believe it's our friend Don from New Jersey. So let me bring him on, and then we'll kind of go around, and maybe we can just discuss some different aspects of that. But, Risa, I think anybody who's ever watched MSNBC or read anything on the Daily Cause would say – that analysis was right on the money that you just gave
absolutely.
Us. They're incapable of reasoning.
Right.
Okay. Don, is that you on the line?
Yes, it is. Hi. How is everyone?
Hey.
Hey, Don.
I think we're all doing pretty well. How are
yes.
you?
I'm doing okay. I am happy. It's a happier country today for everyone. And I'm happy because President Barack Hussein Obama is unhappy.
And he's
agreed.
Tucking his tail and running to India on our dime.
Yeah, I know. Like, what was the Drudge today had that President Barack Hussein Obama is taking like a whole fleet with him. It's just
right.
like, holy cow. Like, does he really need 3,000 people to go with him?
And 38 warships.
38 warships. Can you believe that?
Is he trying to be Julius Caesar?
I'm glad you made that analogy. That's right. That is what Caesar used to take to the test. That's Yes. But remember, all totalitarian leaders come that way. They eventually exempt themselves like kings. They believe it's different for them. The rules are different.
Yeah, because, like, if President Bush were to come in, like, if he were to come in, like, when he was visiting Iraq, if he were to come in with that many people, they would say, like, oh, my. Like, they would start playing all the old Hitler war footage of him standing there as, like, troops of Nazis goose-stepped out in front of him.
Oh, sure.
And,
of course.
But, again, President Barack Hussein Obama can't do anything wrong. So, yeah, I'm going to do that the entire time, so get used to it.
Yeah.
So,
and this comes shortly, not too long after his wife went on her little sojourn to Spain.
$30 million. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
personally, I think what I think he realizes that he's in this office for only another 2 years. So now he's going to go finally, like, start reading up on what really happened in Area 51 and finally just get as much presidential, get as much fun as he can out of the office while he can.
I call it bling.
Yeah, literally.
What does everybody else think? Mark, what are your thoughts on that? And then Steve, we'll go to you and kind of go around. I mean, what do you guys think? I mean, why do you think he's exorbitant?
I think he's putting the nail in his coffin with this trip 2 days or, you know, within a week after this election. And one thing I'm going to be watching very closely is John Boehner. All, you know, for 2 years, it's gone around the internet, the pictures of Nancy Pelosi 747 and everything. And I'm really going to be watching Boehner to see if he steps into that plane or if he decides to drive himself where he needs to go.
Yeah, that's a good point. I really hope so. Steve, you have any? What are your thoughts on that?
I really don't have any thoughts on that.
No, I mean on the whole thing.
I have
trip.
Some thoughts on that.
Go ahead,
Sarah.
Kathy. Go ahead, Kathy.
What I think, and I think it's reasonable, but I think it goes to the amount of luxury that someone requires, but. John Boehner will be third in line for the presidency. So he does have to look out for his safety and security. And that may require, you know, him not necessarily driving himself to where he needs to go. You know, but I do think that when we consider the amount of money that Nancy Pelosi spent in order to, quote, protect herself, she really, really went over the line. I would like to see John Boehner, if he is elected, majority leader, to at least show some consideration for the economy and to be a little less flamboyant in the way that he travels and takes care of himself. I mean, we do need to protect him as a country.
Right.
So I think that there's got to be a happy medium there.
Yeah, and I agree with that. I wondered, what did you guys think of his – I know it's on the internet. I haven't watched it yet, but what does everybody think of Boehner's remarks on election night? I mean, because as we know, he got choked up. I mean, and there were kind of like mixed reviews on some of the blogs I read. I mean, some of them were just like, come on, this is politics. Like Dennis Miller last night said, this is a blood sport. There is no crying in a blood sport. Anybody have thoughts on that? And also, what do they think, you know, now that the GOP, you know, has been reelected and we have all these great new Tea Party candidates, what are your thoughts on what would you like to see them do when they get in there? So let's, Kathy, let me start with you and then we can kind of go around.
With me?
Yeah, uh-huh.
Oh, okay. well, actually, the very first thing I would like to see them do is to commit to doing whatever they can to repeal Obamacare, defunding it and working toward repealing it. I've heard people say, oh, that's not going to be possible, and maybe it won't be until after Barack Hussein Obama is out of office. But I do hope that all of our new legislators take that pledge seriously and they get right to work on that. And the other thing that I would like to see is them taking a look at all of the social programs that our federal government is currently funding, and to slash whatever is not necessary and really start to reduce the spending. I also think that we need to look at, I understand there's some $600 billion stimulus plan going into effect. I might be wrong about that. I haven't really read it, but I would like to see that really scrutinized by our new legislators. And if it's not necessary, don't do it. We just have to start cutting spending. And people are not going to like it. Some people are maybe harmed by it, but it needs to be done.
Yep. Time to face some hard truths. Okay, Risa, what do you think about that?
Well, his crying didn't bother me. When you consider what a royal fight this has been and how difficult this has been, I mean, do all of you remember after Scott Brown was elected when message received? No, it wasn't. And then the abomination of his talk yesterday where he said that we should not misread the election result, or that it was just the perception, what he did was the perception that government was getting big and intrusive. Like hell, it was not a perception. Government is too big and intrusive. It's an absolute mess. I think because the victory was so decisive, because the media is using terms like unprecedented in everything, in the polls and everything, I think, and then when that final moment of victory, when you realize we did it, of course there needs to be a release. And I do think it's wonderful with one caveat. The next 2 years, and I'm saying this from the pattern of history, are inherently dangerous because Obama is a narcissist and he is a communist. And the reason that all socialisms inevitably give way to communism is because socialism starts with business and economy and money. There inevitably comes a point where people get sick of their leaders living in gold palaces while they are working their fingers to the bone just to put food on the table. And they will revolt, which means a leader must clamp down. We can't count on this man to be self-disciplined, self-analyzing, and have a mighty change of heart. No. The pattern of history, and patterns are mathematical, and math is the language of the universe, and we are not above the laws of math. Without a massive intervention, the pattern of history set. And he did not get his way. And no spoiled, narcissistic little eunuch, politically castrated eunuch, ever takes that well. And so that makes the next 2 years, I think, even more different than ever. And we need to look into Nevada. Something stinks in Nevada. There's no way Reid won that election legally.
Yeah, you know, something, and even Michelle Malkin wrote about that today, something definitely smells rotten in the state of Denmark.
Yeah, absolutely.
You look at the polls and the momentum, and I will have to say, Steve, because you mentioned this at the top of the show, there's another aspect where the RNC completely dropped the ball. They didn't have a ground game. I mean, Rush Limbaugh was railing about this today. And, you know, instead of solidifying immediately behind the people's chosen candidate, Sharon Engel, we were treated to, oh, is she too extreme? You know, all this, you know, all these narratives that were out there. And I think if they had immediately just solidified behind her and got a ground game in place and got rolling, you know, it might have been such a huge margin that they wouldn't have been able to cheat. Don, what are your thoughts on that? Because I know that was one of the races you were watching pretty closely.
Yeah, a couple of things. Number one, in regards to John Boehner crying, at least he didn't do cartwheels like a jackass, like somebody in Colorado. So.
Good point.
I mean, I was having lunch with my buddy Tom, and the TV was on, and we looked up, and we were like, what the heck is that? And we just saw this guy doing cartwheels, and Tom says to me, he goes, yeah, that's what I want out of my elected officials, cartwheeling in front of people. So I was like, great, the sissification of America continues. And I mean, like, I would have understood if he went for a manly hunting thing, but cartwheels? Yeah.
We got a cheerleader! Woo!
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it would have been great if he had cheerleaders instead of him being the cheerleader, so.
Yeah, cheerleaders.
I mean, yeah, so right now, the one thing that I think the Republican Party needs to do is to the other thing that I'm encouraged about, because John Boehner, I do like him, but he tends to be Trent Lott spineless every so often, and he really he's kind of like Trent Lott if Trent Lott had been forced to go to tea parties for about 2 years. and John Boehner is kind of like, he carries himself like that, and he keeps saying, yeah, we're going to repeal Obamacare, but then I've heard, like, I was listening to an interview with Nan Hayworth, who was just elected, and she beat John Hall up here in New York, and she was saying, like, well, I think we're going to have to revise health care, and I'm like, no, revise is not good. You repeal the darn thing. Nobody wants it. None of this revision crap. And Boehner has been hammering on that. He's been saying, we're going to repeal it, going to repeal it, going to repeal it. And I hope he continues to repeal it. Now, the third thing that I just, it was great. I actually got on Facebook today and I actually added the National Republican Senate Committee, like, on Facebook, like, you can like them. So I liked them, and I say that in quotes, and I put on there, shame on you guys. Basically, Christine O'Donnell's loss is on their shoulders. This time around, it is not her fault. I flat out say it was the National Republican Senatorial Committee, and every one of those people should be thrown off of it for the way that they treated her.
Yep.
That is just absolutely inexcusable. And it really was, honestly, could you imagine if a police officer showed up to a burning house fire and he picked up his phone and his radio and he says, hey, we need somebody we need the fire department here. And the fire department said, no, we're not going with that guy because he didn't support us with our fireman annual fund or something like that. That was basically same thing here. And every one of those people should just be thrown out of office for that. That was just a load of crap with the way that they treated O'Donnell.
The facts support your case, because she won over independents. Who lost were Republicans.
That's right.
So for anybody that doesn't think, you're absolutely right. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Risa, you're trying to jump in there.
No, I was just agreeing with you, and I think it's kind of the same thing they did to Joe Miller. And have they made a final decision on that? Are they going to count all the independents? Or because right now, if the independent vote is split between all those people up there, wouldn't that make Miller the winner? But I'm surprised at how the Republicans have been so wishy-washy on supporting Miller.
Yeah.
Well, so true. Well, go ahead, Don.
No, I was going to say, because it's Palin's boy. And I say this with respect. He's Palin's boy. And that's why they're not going to go along with it. Well, it's like Sarah Palin wants him, and we don't want her. And we don't want her. We don't want to give her any more of the thing credit than she has.
Excuse me. Yeah, and the second Lisa Murkowski, you know, when she said, I'm going to run as an independent after promising that she was going to coalesce behind the winner. Again, the people voted in the primary. They selected Joe Miller, and instead
that's
of being a gracious sport about it, gracious loser. She was a sore loser. She thinks she's entitled to that seat, and she represents everything that's wrong with politics, along with Charlie Crist. They should have taken away her committee post, Murkowski.
Absolutely.
And then she would not have had that leverage. But that, again, Don and Risa and everybody on this call, again, it just shows the failures of the Republican Party.
That's right.
Yet another case.
Yeah, exactly. And somebody was asking me about that the other day. They were saying, like, what would happen if the Tea Party were to basically what would end up happening is that if the Republican Party fails this time around, then, frankly, it's going to be a Tea Party.
Yeah.
And the thing is that with elections, Risa was talking about history, the Whig Party didn't become oh, isn't it great that Lincoln was the first Republican president? No, people forget that in 1856, Fremont ran against Buchanan, And look what happened when Buchanan was president. So we lost, like if the Republicans this time around do not, like the ones that we elected, if they go back to the spineless Trent Lott days,
mm-hmm.
Then we're going to basically, it's going to take about two or three election cycles, whether they're midterm or four-year terms, I don't know, but it's going to take about two or three election cycles for the Republican, for the conservative grassroots wing of the Republican Party to coalesce itself into the Tea Party and organize itself to actually have like a committee, to actually have like a leadership committee, all of that stuff. It's going to take a number, about two or three election cycles for that to happen. And in that time, when you're looking at about two, four, six, even eight, maybe even 12 years, that look at how much damage President Barack Hussein Obama, President Joe Biden, and even President Hillary Clinton would do to the country in that time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's
exactly.
A very,
you know,
frightening
what?
Thing.
It sure is. And still now, they're still playing politics. I mean, we're hanging on the precipice here. And the Republican Party, they have, let's face it, they have always taken the grassroots for granted. We've always been treated like stepchildren. We're always the ones who are told, oh, okay, you got to get behind the moderate. You have to get behind the moderate. And we all fall in line. But yet we're not extended that same deference. You know, when our people, when our grassroots voters in the primaries fairly elect the person that most reflects their values, and I'm getting a little tired of it.
Yeah, and even now, there people in the Republican leadership are saying, well, we need to distance ourselves from the Tea Party people or the tea baggers. And let me say, as a proud tea bagger, I would like to encourage those of us who have besmirched us over the last several months to suck something of mine, and I'll just leave it at that.
Okay, Don.
Sorry.
This is a family show, so let's keep it clean.
Sorry about that. I said truck.
Okay. All right. Oh, that sounds good. Steve, do you have anything to add? You've been a little quiet lately. I want to make sure I give everybody a chance to chime in.
Well, I've been telling people for a long time that they shouldn't give a dime to the RNC or the NRSC or the NRCC, for that matter, until they start recognizing that it's the grassroots, the people that, you know, do the voting, that decide who our nominees are. And John Cornyn, you know, he's been trying to play it cool ever since they made the mistake of endorsing Charlie Crist 5 seconds after he announced, when it was pretty clear that there was going to be a very contentious primary here in Florida. And, you know, now they've done it in several places. They did it with Specter. They did it with Donald. They did it with Miller. And, you know, we have to show them that that's just not going to fly. And there's a really good reason that there hasn't been money for a lot of these candidates this year, because when you have a leader in the RNC like Michael Steele, who's so busy hobnobbing with the president and he's spending his time promoting his book when he's not supposed to be doing that. His main job is to raise money for the RNC for candidates, and he wasn't doing that. So, you know, when he talks about wanting to run for reelection, no way. And if they reelect him, well, nobody should give them a dime. As for the NRSC, John Cornyn, he should not run for reelection as the head of the NRSC. And if they do that again, especially in the 2012 cycle, where we get two-thirds of the Senate up for election, they're going to run into the same problem they ran into this time. They're going to find that the grassroots, the voters, the rank and file Republicans are not going along with them anymore. And the NRCC was a little bit better. If you look at who they chose for young guns, including Alan West, they seemed to get the idea a little bit quicker than some of the others. And they certainly were more receptive to grassroots than the other two groups were.
Steve,
but,
can I ask you something real quick? Have you noticed, though, that with the new conservatives, the Tea Party conservatives, we are willing to clean our house? All of the groups that I'm associated with all say the same thing, no matter how great you are as a leader, no more than two terms, because our founding fathers trusted that there would always be plenty of good ones out there. And, this is one of the things that I have really been enthused about the Tea Party with in the last 18 months, is that they are willing to take out their own Republicans.
Well, that part I
yeah.
do like. Unfortunately, the Tea Party itself is, I think, at the national level in a lot of trouble. You know, when you hear the liberals talking about the fact that the Tea Party people don't recognize that they're being used by people with a lot of money, there's some truth to that. The leaders of the Tea Party Patriots each make more than $100,000 a year. The Tea Party Express out of California, you know, they may have started out with the best of intentions, but there's obviously an awful lot of money flowing there, and money corrupts everybody, not
yeah,
just politics.
True.
And
yeah.
you know, we have to be as vigilant, those of us that are loosely associated with Tea Parties or associated with local Tea Parties, about these national guys as we are with our politicians. Because
right.
otherwise, you know, Freedom Works is another group that you got to look out for. You know, Dick Armey is not an outsider. Dick Armey was a leader in the Republican Party. You know, and it's a subtle way of trying to co-opt the movement. And we don't want that. We want it to be the other way around. We want the grassroots, a true bottom-up movement. And we have to be very vigilant about that, or we're going to have a very big problem.
I think I
well,
need to write on that, yeah.
Okay, guys,
quickly,
let's go around because we have a few more minutes. So, Kathy, go ahead and we'll just do one last go around and then we'll close out the show.
Okay. I think that many of us during these campaigns, we developed personal relationships with a lot of the candidates that we supported. You know, we went out to their events, we talked to them, we introduced ourselves, and I think that as grassroots, I don't want to use the word leaders, but activists maybe, those of us who have gone out and actually really, really tried to get our point across to the candidates of what we expected them to do once they got into office, I think that we have to never sit down and shut up and not be involved with what's going on in our country and not be afraid to use those personal relationships to contact those candidates if we see things going wrong. We've kind of almost put ourselves in a position to where people who aren't involved in the Tea Party movement will ask us what we think, ask us how even to vote sometimes, but to use those connections that we've made with each other and with the candidates to keep these candidates accountable. I think that's our second biggest job. If we're going to call ourselves a grassroots movement, we can't stop. We have to keep on going.
That's
and
right.
we have to make sure that they toe the line in the things that they said they were going to do.
Absolutely.
That's my
Absolutely.
Opinion.
Okay, guys, we have 1 minute remaining. 90 seconds. So everybody could kind of go around to say who you are, let us know where we can find you, and then I'm going to have to close out this awesome show, and I want to thank you all for joining me tonight. Okay, Risa, you go next, and Don, Steve, and Kathy.
Okay, yes, I'm Risa LaRue Kirkland. I'm known as the War Chick, writer of military history, conservative commentary, and you can find me at americaswarchick.blogspot.com. I'm also on Twitter and Facebook.
Thanks. Hey, Don?
Hi, this is Don Smith. I'm when I'm not offending people with mild profanity, can be seen on my blog, which is donsmith74.wordpress.com. I'm also a newspaper writer here up here in New Jersey. I'm also a comic book writer, and I'm also a writer. I do write about local American history up here in New Jersey, and we will be seeing Steve Rosenblum in office one day.
Yay, Steve. All right, thanks, Don. Steve, go ahead real quick.
Steven Rosenblum. You can find me on Facebook or Twitter, and, of course, I host Conservative Republican Forum with Daria on Saturday evenings at 6 p.m. At www.blogtalkradio.com/Stephen R. Repub.
All right, Kathy, my good friend and patriot.
Yes, I'm a small business owner here in Palm Beach County, Florida, and I'm a grassroots activist, and I am currently working with Daria and Ellen Snyder. We are going to be soon getting up our website, theconservativediva.net, And Daria, Ellen, and I are the three conservative divas.
That's now, right. And
you can find me in it. I'm on Facebook right now as Lily Joy.
Excellent. Well, I want to thank everyone for joining us tonight. And we did go over time, but that's okay because in the archive, people will be able to hear us right now. So, and yes, I wanted to let everybody know, in the meantime, with the Conservative Diva, you can find the type of content that we'll be posting at my blog, which is dariaann.wordpress.com. And I have my thoughts there on the Alan West Victory Party, along with some videos. And I posted Marco Rubio's excellent victory speech there as well. So you can find some great content there, and that'll be the same type of content that we're going to be posting on Conservative Diva. And I will certainly bring Kathy and Ellen on my show when we're ready to, when that goes live and we're ready to broadcast it to the world. So thank you so much, everyone. You are all patriots. Thank you for all of your hard work. And let's keep up the fight, and God bless America.
American faith in America.